Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number... Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program Number 746, Greek Tragedy. This has been recorded on June 19th of the year 2011. We're going to return once again. We're going to plunge right back in with the very important GermanForeignPolicy.com newsletter. By the way, this is fed along the bottom of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website, along with Daily Global Muslim Brotherhood Report, or the Muslim Brotherhood Daily Global Report. I have to confess that I sometimes get that name mixed up, but in any event, those two very important newsletters and Lucy Commissar's work on offshore feed along the bottom of the SpitfireList.com website. We're going to plunge right back in with our analysis of the Greek economic and social tragedy, how it relates to the situations of the other southern European countries, the so-called pigs nations. Of course, Ireland is not southern Europe, but it is what they call the peripheral nations. And this, in turn, is by way of taking a look at what could be going on in the United States. Because, indeed, the battle cry of the GOP right is, oh, the U.S. is so in debt, we're in the same position, Greece is in, blah, blah, blah. So do we have to do what Greece is being forced to do? Well, it isn't working in Greece. On the contrary, it is promoting deflationary spiral, as I did my best to try to describe at the end of Side 1. More about what is taking place here and about what is taking place in Greece, and more about what may be taking place here in the United States if the GOP right has its way. This, again, from the German ForeignPolicy.com newsletter of June 10th of 2011, in the focus of protests. The German austerity dictate is meeting growing resistance within the EU. Following the mass protests in Spain and the most recent hundreds of thousands demonstrating in Greece, further activities have been announced which are explicitly aimed at the so-called EU Growth and Stability Pact. A new development can be observed particularly in Greece. The Greek crisis is the result of a structural imbalance in the Eurozone which has degraded Greece to a sales market for German products. Therefore, Berlin is to a growing extent becoming the focus of the protests. According to the German-Greek Chambers of Industry and Commerce, the popular opinion that, quote, the Germans are living at the expense of the Greeks is widespread. Structurally, Portugal and other countries are suffering from the same problem as Greece. According to German media, there is a danger that Berlin's new public austerity demands could foment, quote, anti-German sentiments from Greece to Portugal, unquote. Just recently, a Spanish political advisor warned that if Berlin continues with its dictates, the EU will soon have a reputation similar to that of the IMF to be an instrument for imposing compulsory economic measures. The growing resistance to German hegemonic policy is embedded in the reinvigorated social protests in numerous European countries. The protests in Spain are currently drawing most attention, with their hundreds of thousands participating in protest camps and far more than 100,000 taking to the streets on May 15th alone. Numerous demonstrations have since followed in many European capitals, for example at the Place de la Bastille in Paris, in Brussels, London, Rome, Prague, and in Berlin. Strong protests have again been reported also in Greece, where on May 25th alone, approximately 50,000 people demonstrated at Athens' Syntagma Square. Last weekend, the number of demonstrators had risen to 100,000, and according to some reports, even to several hundred thousands. More protests have already been announced, for example, a demonstration against the so-called EU Growth and Stability Pact on June 19th in Spain. That would, of course, be today. I'm recording this on June 19th. Continuing. The example of Slovenia, where last weekend a referendum was held on three draft laws, including a retirement reform bill, demonstrates that not only does resistance to this social overkill enjoy widespread support, it occasionally achieves political results. According to this bill, the retirement age is to be raised from currently 61 for women and 63 for men to 65. Both Berlin and Brussels sought to influence the results. Jean-Claude Juncker, current president of the Council of the European Union, called the step unavoidable, unquote, And European Council President Herman Van Rompuy went to Slovenia 2 days before the referendum in support of the Yes camp. Berlin also openly intervened in sovereign Slovenian decision-making. The Slovenians had taken note of what the German chancellor had said earlier about people, quote, not going on retirement earlier than in Germany in countries such as Greece, Spain, and Portugal. The German government also made known in Slovenia that it considers a higher retirement age, quote, a sensible step towards sustainable financing of social insurance, unquote. Yet Slovenia's population has resisted Berlin's blatant inference in their Yet Slovenia's population had resisted Berlin's blatant interference. In their referendum, nearly three-fourths of the population have rejected the retirement reform. In Greece in particular, social protests are linked to explicit expressions of hostility towards the German hegemonic policy. Over the past few years, it was Germany, more than any other country, which had profited from trade with Greece. In fact, up until the introduction of the euro, Athens had maintained a positive trade balance with Germany. Note this again. This is critical to understanding this history. Over the past, again, repeating the last couple of sentences, over the past few years, it was Germany more than any other country which had profited from trade with Greece. In fact, up until the introduction of the euro, Athens had maintained a positive trade balance with Germany. Only after adopting the euro, which robbed Greece of its option of a monetary devaluation and thereby the protection of its enterprises vis-a-vis the more powerful German competition, was this relationship fundamentally transformed. The press openly declares that in the eurozone, with its structural imbalance, unquote, there are states such as Greece and Portugal today, again quoting, that are hardly more than sales markets for the export-oriented and high-performance member states of northwestern Europe, unquote. In fact, the German trade balance surplus in commerce with Greece has already risen to more than 6 billion euros in 2008. The Greek public is well aware of these facts, which has transformed their expenditures into German profits. The administrative director of the German-Greek Chamber of Industry and Commerce in Athens admits, quote, Costas normal consumer, in the meantime, is convinced that the Germans are living at the expense of the Greeks, unquote. Greek resentment toward the German austerity dictate is growing since Berlin and Brussels have forced Greece to privatize a large part of its state properties, particularly to the advantage of German companies. Over the past few days, T-shirts distributed by employees of the OTE telephone company bearing a swastika and slogans against German hegemony have been making headlines. By the way, parenthetically, not in the United States they haven't. The German company Deutsche Telekom owns a large portion of OTE, and Athens has now offered to sell even more. German media have begun to warn that Berlin's new, too obvious austerity demands are apt to, quote, foment anti-German sentiments from Greece to Portugal, unquote. Some Greek commentators are referring to the German chancellor as, quote, a neo-colonial despot, unquote. A reversal of this trend is nowhere in sight. Only recently, a Spanish political advisor warned that if Berlin continues with its dictates, the EU will soon have a reputation similar to that of the IMF, to be an instrument for imposing compulsory economic measures. But even more dangerous for Berlin is that, particularly in Greece, the popular anger is no longer directed solely at the EU, but to a growing degree at Germany. In the long run, the hegemonic power will have difficulty avoiding this development in areas under its control. Anger in many Latin American countries is similarly directed at the United States, which until now has been able to maintain its exclusive predominance in large areas of its backyard, unquote, with the help of circles in the Latin American elite. The current crisis will show whether widespread popular criticism of Germany, alongside cooperative domestic elites in the countries of the periphery, will lead to the development of parallel structures in Europe. So again, note the extent to which the Greek entry into the European Monetary Union benefited Germany as an exporting power and hurt Greece. And something that needs to be noted here, and that is the fact that basically one of the things that is taking place is the dissolution of Greek sovereignty. Basically, Greece is rapidly becoming a German and European colony and is losing its political and social sovereignty. Once again, I think there are some lessons to be learned here in the United States from the Greek tragedy. In For the Record 744, we took a look at, among other things, the draconian plans in Michigan being implemented and proposed by the Republican Party in Michigan to basically do something that I think could be seen as analogous to Michigan, particularly cities and perhaps counties in Michigan, something very similar to what is being proposed or actually be taking place in Greece. Basically, if debt is seen as too great a burden for particular cities, then it will be, if the GOP in Michigan has its way, those cities' sovereignties can be basically taken over by the state government, and private corporations can be placed in charge of administering these delinquent, I guess one could say, municipalities. Something very similar may be taking place in counties as well. And again, I don't think it's a reach at all to see a parallel between what the EU and Germany are proposing for Greece and what the GOP is proposing in Michigan and elsewhere. And indeed, one of the battle cries of the GOP has been the U.S. we've got to slash spending enormously and do this and that, otherwise we're going to be like Greece. And in fact, that is fallacious. But taking a look at the loss of Greek sovereignty, try this one out. This is from the Financial Times of May 29th of 2011. Greece set for severe bailout conditions. European leaders are negotiating a deal that would lead to unprecedented outside intervention in the Greek economy, including international involvement in tax collection and privatization of state assets in exchange for new bailout loans for Athens. People involved in the talks said the package would also include incentives for private holders of Greek debt voluntarily to extend Athens' repayment schedule, as well as another round of austerity measures. Officials hope that as much as half of the 60 to 70 billion euros, 86 to 100 billion dollars in new financing needed by Athens until the end of 2013, could be accounted for without new loans. Under a plan advocated by some, much of that would be covered by the sale of state assets and the change in repayment terms for private debt holders. And again, what basically is being proposed is that the Greek nation is going to be obliged to sell off state assets to private corporations. German corporations figure to be the main beneficiaries of that. And basically tax collection, the collecting of revenues is one of the primary functions of a national government. However, in Greece, it is being proposed that that be taken away from the Greek government. And again, as I did my best to explain at the end of side one, when you're in this deflationary spiral, when all you're doing is cutting, you're firing people from jobs, they can't purchase products, they can't support the commercial economy, and it adds to deficits. Not only do they need state help to survive, but also they are no longer paying taxes, which then stimulates rounds of further cutting. This is the dreaded deflationary spiral, and that is the real, we hear all about runaway inflation, et cetera, and certainly that's no joke. But what really scares the bejesus out of economists is the deflationary spiral, folks. That is the dark, the angel of economic death and social death, real death too, frankly, ultimately, that lurks at the door. Once more from this, brief sentence from this Financial Times article of May 29th, Greece set for severe bailout conditions. In addition, the European Central Bank remains opposed to any restructuring of Greek debt that could be considered a credit event, a change in terms that could technically be ruled a default. So it is now being proposed that the Greek nation have its taxes collected for it, in addition to having to sell off state assets. Still more from the financial affray. This is a Reuters article, excuse me. Greece denies missed fiscal targets. EU bickers. It's from May 28th of 2011. The country's finance minister denied a report in the German weekly news magazine Spiegel that international inspectors will report that Greece failed on all its fiscal targets, a condition for getting a key fifth tranche of 110 billion euro bailout. Skipping down. But pressure continued to pile on the socialist government of Greece, which saw its popularity fall behind its conservative opposition for the first time since the 2009 elections in the wake of harsh austerity measures to exit the debt crisis. Note that the beneficiaries of this are the Greek right, just as the beneficiaries of economic malaise in this country has been the American right. I would also note for listeners, for the record program 412, the engineer intends to wreck the train. The deliberate piling up of debt by the Bush 2 administration, really following the examples of Reagan and Bush 1, and this behind the dismissive cry of Dick Cheney that, quote, deficits don't matter, it was done deliberately to promote exactly what we are seeing, and what they are trying to do is to roll back the New Deal, basically to realize the goals of the 1934 coup attempt, which was a fascist coup attempt to get rid of Franklin Roosevelt. One last sentence from this Reuters article. Echoing earlier views from the IMF, ECB board member Jürgen Stark said Greece's privatization program could raise six times more than the 50 billion euros planned. Quote, the Greek government has shares in listed companies. It owns real estate. Experts estimate the sales potential from privatizations at up to 300 billion euros, Stark told German newspaper Welt am Sonntag. So again, take a look at the proposals to basically, to a large extent, anyway, eliminate Greek national sovereignty. And when you're having your revenue collection capabilities removed from you, you're pretty much, you've lost sovereignty. Now, again, one of the reasons I'm going into this is because we are being compared by the GOP right to Greece. In fact, that is a fallacious comparison. And we're told that the stiff medicine that is good for Greece is going to be necessary for us. Well, that medicine is killing Greece, and that's exactly what will happen if the GOP right, again, that's redundant, gets its way in this country. Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist who writes a twice-weekly column for the New York Times, weighed in on the Greek situation and the dangers of deflation from an April 9, 2010 column that he titled Learning from Greece. The debt crisis in Greece is approaching the point of no return, as prospects for a rescue plan seem to be fading thanks largely to German obduracy. Nervous investors have driven interest rates on Greek government bonds sky high, sharply raising the country's borrowing costs. This will push Greece even deeper into debt and further undermining confidence. At this point, it's hard to see how the nation can escape from this death spiral into default. It's a terrible story and clearly an object lesson for the rest of us, but an object lesson in what exactly? Yes, Greece is paying the price for its past fiscal irresponsibility, yet that's by no means the whole story. The Greek tragedy also illustrates the extreme danger posed by a deflationary monetary policy, and that's a lesson one hopes American policymakers will take to heart. The key thing to understand about Greece's predicament is that it's not just a matter of excessive debt. Greece's public debt at 113% of gross domestic product is indeed high, but other countries have dealt with similar levels of debt without crisis. For example, in 1946, the United States, having just emerged from World War II, had federal debt equal to 122% of GDP. Yet investors were relaxed, and rightly so. Over the next decade, the ratio of U.S. debt to GDP was cut nearly in half, easing any concerns people might have had about our ability to pay what we owed. And debt as a percentage of GDP continued to fall in the decades that followed, hitting a low of 33% in 1981. So how did the U.S. government manage to pay off its wartime debt? Actually, it didn't. At the end of 1946, the federal government owed $271 billion. By the end of 1956, that figure had risen slightly to $274 billion. The ratio of debt to GDP fell not because debt went down, but because GDP went up, roughly doubling in dollar terms over the course of a decade. That rise in GDP in dollar terms was almost equally the result of economic growth and inflation, with both real GDP and the overall level of prices rising about 40% from 1946 to 1956. Unfortunately, Greece can't expect a similar performance. Why? Because of the euro. Until recently, being a member of the eurozone seemed like a good thing for Greece, bringing with it cheap loans and large inflows of capital. But those capital inflows also led to inflation, and when the music stopped, Greece found itself with costs and prices way out of line with Europe's big economies. Over time, Greek prices will have come back down, and that means, over time, Greek prices will have to come back down. And that means that unlike post-war America, which inflated away part of its debt, Greece will see its debt burden worsened by deflation. That's not all. Deflation is a painful process which invariably takes a toll on growth and employment. So Greece won't grow its way out of debt. On the contrary, it will have to deal with its debt in the face of an economy that's stagnant at best. So the only way Greece could tame its debt problem would be with savage spending cuts and tax increases, measures that would themselves worsen the unemployment rate. No wonder, then, that bond markets are losing confidence and pushing the situation to the brink. What can be done? The hope was that other European countries would strike a deal guaranteeing Greek debt in return for a commitment to harsh fiscal austerity. That might have worked, but without German support, such a deal won't happen. Greece could alleviate some of its problems by leaving the euro and devaluing its currency. But it's hard to see how Greece could do that without triggering a catastrophic run on its banking system. Indeed, worried depositors have already begun pulling cash out of Greek banks. There are no good answers here, actually, no non-terrible answers. But what are the lessons for America? Of course, we should be fiscally responsible. What that means, however, is taking on the big, long-term issues above all health costs, not grandstanding and penny-pinching over short-term spending to help a distressed economy. Equally important, however, we need to steer clear of deflation or even excessively low inflation. Unlike Greece, we're not stuck with someone else's currency. But as Japan has demonstrated, even countries with their own currencies can get stuck in a deflationary trap. What worries me most about the U.S. situation right now is the rising clamor from inflation hawks who want the Fed to raise rates and the federal government to pull back from stimulus, even though employment has barely started to recover. If they get their way, they'll perpetuate mass unemployment. But that's not all. America's public debt will be manageable if we eventually return to vigorous growth and moderate inflation. But if the tight money people prevail, that won't happen, and all bets will be off. And again, bear in mind, this was written, this column is from April of 2010. The GermanForeignPolicy.com newsletters issues that we were reading were from the spring of this year, 2011. And we can see what the austerity has done, or really what it has not done, for Greece. And one of the points that I want to make, and we're eventually going to be coming back to the United States, something that I want to point out here concerns an attack that was made on the proposal by the Fed to implement quantitative easing. The idea basically was to allow U.S. interest rates to decline in order to stimulate, basically have the dollar decline. The dollar is unnaturally strong because of the dollar status as the reserve currency of choice. A weaker dollar would stimulate U.S. exports and presumably the economy as well. Well, not surprising. Basically, this has been the secret of both China to an extent and Germany, is that relatively weak currencies have made their exports relatively economical for people to purchase, stimulating their export economy and their economy as a whole. I also want to note that Germany has a much, much, much more rigorous safety net program than we do. In fact, German industrial and labor relations are in many ways optimum. Not so in the United States, But the basic source of German economic strength has been the euro and a weak currency. So something we're going to take up at greater length when we deal one of the toughest shows I've ever done. I'm going to wrestle with PIMCO, again, the wholly owned bond subsidiary of Allianz, the German insurer. That company was one of the companies that helped to administer the economic bailout and the TARP program. It basically became part of the government along with Goldman Sachs and other better known players. PIMCO is hugely important, and they are basically saying that the U.S. is finished and that if it doesn't slash the bejesus out of its economy and its budget, then no one should bother investing in U.S. T-bills. When PIMCO talks like that, it affects the market, and along with some other high rollers and major players, such predictions can become self-fulfilling prophecies because of the economic concentration that has taken place. Something we'll take up at greater length. This is an article also from the Financial Times, Ralph Atkins in Frankfurt, from November 7th of 2010. Germany has put itself on a collision course with the U.S. over the global economy, after its finance minister launched an extraordinary attack on policies being pursued in Washington. Wolfgang Schäuble accused the U.S. of undermining its policymaking credibility, increasing global economic certainty, and of hypocrisy over exchange rates. The U.S. economic growth model was in a deep crisis, unquote. Quote, he also warned over the weekend. Well, leaving aside the relative success or failure of QE2, as it has been known, the idea was to make the dollar a little bit weaker, thereby stimulating U.S. exports and thereby stimulating the U.S. economy. Exactly, to a certain extent, what Germany has been doing with the weak euro. And we're going to conclude this broadcast by reviewing some things that can be found in, among other places, the Books for Download section of the Spitfire website. In the description for the book, The Thousand-Year Conspiracy, Secret Germany Behind the Mask, the author Paul Winkler relates the plans for a Central European German-dominated trade bloc as a vehicle for establishing German world domination. I'm going to have that in the printed description for the broadcast. Basically, this idea was formed by Friedrich Liest in the mid-19th century, and it was realized by the Third Reich. Skipping to the description for Germany Plots with the Kremlin by T.H. Tettens, Dorothy Thompson, one of this country's better investigative reporters, writing for the New York Herald Tribune on May 31st of 1940. This is May 31st of 1940. Discussed what her reporting had led her to believe Germany's goal in World War II was. Now listen to this very carefully. Quote, this is Dorothy Thompson from May of 1940. The Germans have a clear plan of what they intend to do in case of victory. I believe that I know the essential details of that plan. I have heard it from a sufficient number of important Germans to credit its authenticity. Germany's plan is to make a customs union of Europe with complete financial and economic control centered in Berlin. This will create at once the largest free trade area and the largest planned economy in the world. In Western Europe alone, there will be an economic unity of 400 million persons. To these will be added the resources of the British, French, Dutch, and Belgian empires. These will be pooled in the name of Europa Germanica. The Germans count upon political power following economic power and not vice versa. Territorial changes do not concern them because there will be no France or England except as language groups. Little immediate concern is felt regarding political organizations. No nation will have the control of its own financial or economic system or of its own customs. The Nazification of all countries will be accomplished by economic pressure. In all countries, contacts have been established long ago with sympathetic businessmen and industrialists. As far as the United States is concerned, the planners of the World Germanica laugh off the idea of any armed invasion. They say that it will be completely unnecessary to take military action against the United States to force it to play ball with the system. Here, as in every other country, they have established relations with numerous industries and commercial organizations to whom they will offer advantages in cooperation with Germany, unquote. By the way, think about the Bushes and the Thiessens in the Union Bank, among others. Well, that was Dorothy Thompson writing in May of 1940. Aren't you glad that didn't happen? That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 746, Greek Tragedy. This is being recorded on June 19th of the year 2011. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.